This is a special broadcast of the Take 12 Recovery Radio Show. Friday's regularly scheduled broadcast, Walking Through the Language of the Heart with Chris S. and the Monty Man, will return next week.
Expressed on the following broadcasts do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
God is a solution. God is a 12-step.
I like where he's going here.
Helps the community grow, helps us grow. Bonnie has done a phenomenal job. And you're talking about taking people through a spiritual process, getting them into recovery.
Thanks, Monty, and thanks for all your support.
We need spirituality to make this thing work long-term.
It's an absolute pleasure. You certainly know a lot of people.
This is one of the places that is about the business of the solution.
And now, broadcasting on location somewhere in the vast expanse of the Pacific Northwest, it's the over-opinionated 12-stepologist, the Monty Man.
That's right. Get ready. Well, welcome aboard, one and all, to a very special broadcast. As you heard at the beginning of the show, walking through the language of the heart, will resume next Friday. But we have an important show. I feel my co-host here and mentor, really, we both feel this is important to share with you. We have some concerns about what some of us may consider shenanigans going on within a very, very important fellowship that's very important to many of us. Chris S. is on the line with me. Chris, what is going on, man?
Hey Monty. Hey. You know, I really was interested in doing this particular show with you because something that's concerned me for a long, long time is that there was going to be an effort made on the rewriting of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, a plain language text. And I want to preface this show with I've heard a lot of innuendo. I've seen some things online that looks like they're leaks of what is going to be published. It may or it may not end up being the final version. I just, I'm concerned about really how this was done, how this was put on. And there seems to be something not right about the whole process. And you know, and I know we're huge big book aficionados. I mean,
yes.
Our lives are based in many, many ways on the way of life that's presented in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and we both can say that our recovery probably wouldn't have happened without the material in this book and really paying attention to it and putting it into action. So it's kind of personal. It's kind of personal for me to talk about this. Now.
I was just going to say that I too have heard some, scuttlebutt in the air here for a while. Be real honest with you. When I first heard about this several months ago, I really didn't give it a whole lot of attention or thought because we've heard this kind of thing before. And then it didn't happen. You know, I mean, I remember when way prior to the fourth edition of the Big Book coming out, we heard a lot of stuff and it didn't happen. And then finally it did happen.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't really all that concerned. I'm at a point now where I'm more than concerned.
Yeah. So, you know, so am I. Just a little background. And again, you know, some of the facts I put forward, you know, talk to somebody who knows more than me because I haven't been exactly wrapping myself around, you know, general service or, you know, the service structure of Alcoholics Anonymous in a long time. But I can tell you this, there's been times in the past, over the past 35 years that I've been paying attention, where efforts were made to update the language in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, remove some of the patriarchal, sexist language, you know, like get rid of some of the 1939 examples that maybe we don't really understand as well today. There's been a lot of people who had a lot of good ideas with that. And every single time it got shot down by the fellowship, every single time. Now, what I've heard about how this was done is I have a feeling New York got tired of having it shot down. You know, when I say New York, I'm talking about the general service people, the people who board members, people on the literature committees, you know, the people kind of center in New York. I know a lot of delegates all over the place have had their hands in this, but the main impetus has really come out of New York, and I have a feeling that they got tired of having it shot down. So someone came up with the idea that why don't we just send it over to the translation department? Now, the translation department, it's a whole different set of processes and procedures. Like, you know, let's say you want a Greek big book, you know, you send it to the literature department. They contract with a translator. They get it written and boom, it's published. You know, they don't see that it's necessary for the fellowship to approve, you know, each particular book because it's already the big book. So the idea was let's have it translated from 1939 English into plain English, into English that, you know, a fourth grade student would be able to on fourth grade reading level would be able to understand. So that removed it from all of the processes that got it shot down every time. That took it outside of the scope of the fellowship really having the kind of say that, you know, you would normally have for something like this. And you know that there, even in the book itself, it basically says there's been, you know, in one of the forewords is, you know, there's been an absolute insistence on not changing the first 164 mm-hmm. pages. I mean, that's in our bloodstream, isn't it, Monty?
Yes. Now you're referring to this new, I wouldn't even call it a translation. I'd call it a whole different text that may or may not come out. We are talking about the concerns we have here are the first 164 pages primarily true because the stories in the back, they get changed every time there's a new edition anyway. Yeah.
And that's part of the accepted process. You know, a whole committee of people read all these stories and they pick out the best ones. You know, something like that is not going to raise any eyebrows. However, Bill's original writing, you know, it's like changing the Bible, Monty. For somebody like me. So again, you know, I've seen some of the things that you've sent me. You did some great research on this, and I believe they're all leaks. Everything we see is leaks. Because I don't think we're really supposed to see the final version prior to publication. As a matter of fact, I believe that the delegates have more insight into this than anyone. And they've been putting on these Zoom meetings. And it's almost like they've been trained apologists for this. In other words, how to soften the blow to the fellowship and really harp on, you know, the positive points about putting a text like this out. And, you know, no one wants to know about the not really upside down triangle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm worried. I think that the fellowship as a whole has not had the say that it really deserves in something like this.
So are we talking about a new fifth edition, or are we talking about a new fifth edition that stays primarily the same and an alternate edition called the Plain and Simple Language, that there would be two?
Well, my guess is they're going to make a decision based on economics. If the original big book continues to sell like hotcakes, they're going to continue to publish it. If the AA big book in plain English, that's what this is being called, if that sells, that just brings them more money. My worry is when the 12 steps and 12 traditions were published, the adherence and the reliance on the book Alcoholics Anonymous started to fade.
Mm-hmm.
And people started to put 12 step and 12 tradition meetings up everywhere. And when I first got sober, that's what there were. They called them step meetings. And you went in there and, you know, usually what you would do is you'd read a step every week and then share on it.
Right.
And there weren't really any big book meetings. And there certainly weren't any big book workshops at that point in time. Now you can't shake a stick without hitting one. Right. But I would worry that inexperienced, uninformed AA individuals will just grab this plain text and that's it from now on. You know what I mean? Let's use this because it's simpler and it's got updated language. And from what I've read so far, what I'm picking up, Monty, is unconsciousness in the writing. Now it's almost like somebody just looked at our big book who was not an alcoholic and just translated it, you know, in a simpler form, and left a bunch of stuff out. If you don't mind, I've got a list of the 12 steps, and what I've been told is that these 12 steps are going to change. They're going to be rewritten in the plain language book. They may continue to reference the steps as they were written in 1939. But you're also going to have these new steps, and if you don't mind, I would like to do that to emphasize.
Why don't I read the step that is currently written?
Okay,
and then you go ahead and read the proposed new one.
That's perfect.
Okay, so step one: we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable.
Step one, we understood and accepted in our hearts that we could not control ourselves when we drank. We understood and accepted that our lives were falling apart and we needed help putting them back together. Now, on the surface level, that almost sounds like the same thing, but Monty, it's not. First of all, we accepted in our hearts that we couldn't control ourselves when we drank. Non-alcoholics, if they get really drunk, can't control themselves.
Exactly.
That doesn't mean anything as far as identifying an alcoholic. Aunt Fanny, if she drinks a six pack, you know, will crash the car into the pool.
So
our first step, you know, putting it in context, is we're powerless over alcohol.
Yes.
And to be powerless over alcohol, you have to not be able to control it when you start drinking it and not be able to stay away from it when you quit. That's what powerless is. So this isn't saying we're powerless. This is saying we can't control ourselves when we drink. It's almost like they want the barn door to be wide open for every heavy drinker, every disco drunk out there, rather than pinpoint the real problem of the alcoholic.
So what it's also saying, or not saying, however you want to interpret that, it isn't speaking to the fact of the obsession of the mind when we're stone cold sober.
Yeah. It doesn't say we can't stay away from it even when we want to.
Right.
You know, and And I've got to say that over the years, when I'm really looking at literature, I'm looking at the pamphlets being produced and all that. It's almost like, you know, they don't want quality. They want quantity.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's so let's get everybody in here, whether right. they're alcoholic or not. Oh, my God. Well, you know, who are we to say if somebody's – well, you know – If you don't understand that you're an alcoholic, it's really going to be difficult for you to sum up the motivation to actually take the 12 steps and have a spiritual awakening and recover.
Yeah.
You know, and this is almost a heavy drinker first step.
Yes. Yes. Here's step two. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity.
Step two, we began to believe that a higher power could help us stop drinking and help us get control of our lives. So restoration of sanity is a bigger thing than to gain control over our lives.
Yeah.
Control's a bad word, isn't it, Monty?
Yeah. Help us get control over our lives. Excuse me. And the other thing is here, we began to believe that a higher power, it doesn't say a power greater than ourselves, that those are two different things.
Yeah.
Two very different things.
And help us. So in other words, they're assuming that we have the ability.
Yes.
Which is not what the original steps say. The
right.
original steps say we cannot manage our own lives. We must have a new manager.
Yes.
So when it's saying that a higher power could help us stop drinking
and
help us get control. Money, I don't want control of my life. I have so frightfully abused that privilege I have a new director. You know what I mean? I have a new manager. So again, this is a watery kind of a second step.
Yeah. Oh boy. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him.
All right, we decided to trust God as we understood God to guide our lives. So again, on the surface, that seems like the same thing, but trusting and turning one's will and life over to the care of God are really two different things. Like, listen, a lot of times back in the day, I trusted God. You know,
yeah.
And look, I have to, my behavior has to comport with spiritual principles for there really to be any faith in my life. You know what I mean? And decided to trust God is different than turn my will and my life over to God.
Yes. Very different. And you know what else here? And this is very subtle, but In the current step, it said we turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood him. And this says, as we understand God. It's almost like the continuing process of coming to understand him as we're working the step process is gone. We already understand him.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so if I understand him, if I'm at the point, and this is the first time I've done this, and I have come to a complete understanding of God, then why do I need to do 4 through 12?
Yeah. Yeah. God's going to take care of everything. He's going to guide our lives.
Yeah.
So I don't feel like doing a 4-step. God must be guiding me, you know, to not do a 4-step.
Yeah.
It's not turning one's will and one's life over to.
Right.
You know, or making that decision to do so.
Yep. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves.
Okay, this step four says, we thought long and hard about our past and were very honest with ourselves. Then we wrote everything down, like a business owner taking inventory. Okay, yeah, I guess I would have to see the context wrapped around this, you know, how they explain it in the plain text. But, you know, so here's the thing. When I first went to treatment way back in early 89, they asked me to do a life story. So I wrote everything down and I thought long and hard about my past, Monty. And you know what I got out of that? Nothing, because I already knew it. I lived it. It was my perspective. So it was just a huge list of, you know, the whole megillah of my dysfunction. The fourth step in the book Alcoholics Anonymous is a searching and fearless inventory to uncover and discover some deep truths about my stock and trade. What are the various manifestations of self that have been defeating me? What are the most glaring manifestations of self? So it's not, you know, this is almost written by somebody who went through one of those treatment centers and did a life story.
And interestingly enough, in treatment, they call that a first step.
Yeah. Well, yeah. They actually called it a four step in mine. I went to a worse treatment center than you did. But like a business owner, you know, doing inventory. Okay, what does that mean? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like a moral inventory and a business inventory are really two different things, aren't they?
Sure. Sure. Well, a moral inventory is a truthful one. I think they're getting this from that part about, you know, that it talks about, you know, any business that you would take an inventory, throw out the bad, keep the good, all that kind of thing.
And there's some language in the original book that kind of explains it that way. But that's a follow-up. That's a follow-up explanation. That's not, you know, the step itself says a fearless and thorough moral inventory.
It cracks me up too. It says we're very honest with ourselves. I have to tell you that when I got to step four, as much as I thought I was being honest, I didn't know what honesty was yet.
No,
I just didn't.
No. And the original inventory understands that. They ask you to write down who you're mad at, you know, not why you're mad. They ask you to first write down the people, the principles, and the institutions that you're angry with. Then write down what you're afraid of. And then write down the close, personal, intimate relationships you've had, and answer like 9 questions on, you know, how your selfishness and self-centeredness has caused damage in that relationship. And it's through that we start to understand that our problems aren't coming at us, they're coming from us. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to learn that by writing everything down like a business inventory.
Step 5, admit it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs.
Step 5, we took responsibility for everything we had done wrong. We did this with ourselves and also with our higher power. Then we met with someone we trusted and we read them the list we had made. Okay. So the list, they're not calling it an inventory. They're calling it a list. Now, for many, many years prior to like the Joe and Charlie's and the Big Book Awakening, you know, kind of experience, people did asset liability lists, right? So this is saying, you know, our list of everything wrong, I would suppose, we're supposed to admit to. And that's part of a fifth step. I'm not going to criticize that. But if you haven't done inventory the way the book asks you to do inventory, you haven't discovered really the truth about, you know, about what's going on. You know, Monty, did anybody ever come up to you and ask you this? What's wrong with you?
I have people in my past ask me that. Yes.
Well, the fourth step is about finding out what's wrong with you. It's not about just listing all the junk, because I can know all those things. I can know all the bad things that I did, and that doesn't give me power to change.
Yeah.
You know, you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and interestingly enough here, it says, you know, in the current steps, admitted to God. Here it says admitted, you know, we did this with ourselves and also with our higher power. That concerns me because that, in fact, it replaces God with higher power more than what the steps do now, obviously. And it concerns me because you said something a long time ago in one of your talks that, you know, how the big book basically informs the new person that they can choose whatever power they, that, you know, as long as it makes sense to them, you know.
Yeah.
But by the process of the 12 steps, the whole idea is to move on from there, is the way I think you put it, right? Well,
yeah.
We're not moving on from there if we're still referring to the creator as higher power, because I try to remember where it's at, where it talks about now we mention him by name, you know, and that concerns me because if I'm doing all this stuff and it's still the group, or it's still a good idea, or it's still nature, or whatever it is, I'm gonna be sorely disappointed in the outcome.
The original steps brought you to a place where, you know, you would feel God's presence.
Yes.
Then you would come to the consciousness of the presence of God, and then you would become God conscious.
Yes.
Now if your higher power is your sponsor, that's going to be a problem, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So yes, it needs to be a divine higher power.
Right.
And I think, unfortunately, I think a lot of people bristle with that still. You know, they believe that, that they can approach all of these spiritual exercises agnostically.
Don't you think that's because of fear? So when we do our fear inventory, that was one of the things I put down, right? I have some fear about trusting God, right? And I admitted to that. That was one of my issues, you know. And my sponsor said, "Well, we're doing a four step around God, aren't we?" And I go, "Yeah, we are." You know, so I think people that have been in the fellowship for a long time and they're still bristling with that. I have to ask, why is that? You know, why is it? Why haven't you at least given it a go? Why haven't you at least tried it? And it's got to be fear-based. That's all, the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, and so often we put up our own roadblocks. You know, the main purpose of the book Alcoholics Anonymous is to show precisely how we recovered from alcoholism, right?
Yes.
Precisely. So when you're messing with the precision, you're messing with, you know, the steps that bring about an awakened spirit and a consciousness of the presence of God. When you're messing with that, you've taken away that promise that this book will show you precisely how we've recovered from alcoholism. Mm-hmm.
And so far, things with these new steps look kind of vague to me. Little fuzzy around the edges.
You know, I suppose it's better than nothing. And listen, there's some really, really good reasoning behind doing something like this. There's some really good reason to not do it. Okay, so there's two sides of this. Now, some of the good reasons are that there's people that read the big book and it just doesn't speak to them. It's something that's you know, 85 years old. It's written by like a white professional in New York City, you know, who's a patriarchal kind of a guy, and it's a time, you know, like just after World War I, and it doesn't grasp them. But again, this book isn't really meant to just be read. It's meant to be taught to you. It's meant to be experienced, you know, and I can't see a lot of people who've really experienced this book at the level that you and I have who want to change it. I just don't see that. And yes, there are going to be people who don't read on, say, a high school level. I would say Bill's writing is high school level, right? Maybe they're at fourth grade level. And maybe this will be helpful. But the 12 and 12 was helpful. And you know, the 12 and 12 was good. And sometimes the good is the enemy of the best.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting to me, too, that a lot of these people that will claim that they just can't connect with something so old. A lot of those are the same people that are quoting Socrates and Gandhi. So I'm not sure I buy that completely. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character.
All right. It says step six, we became open to the idea our higher power could help get rid of our negative traits. So we're becoming open to the idea that God could get rid of, you know,
that's completely
our
different
higher than, power could get rid of some of our negative traits.
That's completely different than entirely ready.
Yeah.
Completely different.
Yeah. You know, they probably think it's saying the same thing, but syntax matters. Verbiage matters.
Yeah.
You know, so I said earlier on, there seems to be a lack of consciousness in this. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Almost like someone who hasn't done the 12 steps is writing this.
It's almost like someone who hasn't gone to God in prayer and asked for guidance is writing this. Just my opinion.
You know, like it was a contracted translator or
right.
some non-alcoholic guy. It almost sounds that way.
Step seven, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings.
Step seven, we connected with our higher power and asked for help getting rid of our negative traits.
You know, I may have some negative traits that aren't necessarily shortcomings. I mean, I don't know. Again, kind of fuzzy. Step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all.
Step eight, we wrote down a list of everyone we had hurt. We got ready to make amends to them and to find ways to heal our relationships. Now I don't know. I don't know about you, but finding ways to heal the relationship seems selfish to me. Okay. Like became willing to make amends to them all is very selfless. And by making amends, we can't go in with the motivation of healing the relationship. We need to go in with the motivation to set right the wrong to the best of our ability. It's not our business. If the relationship gets better, that's great. If it doesn't, that's fine. But to be attached to it is not in the spirit of the step.
When I'm working with the sponsee and we're getting ready to go into eight and nine, and especially ones that have a background in faith, particularly biblical faith, and they say, so I need to ask them for forgiveness. And I go, pump the brakes here. You're making amends and trying to set right the wrong. But when you're asking them to forgive you, you're putting it back in their lap. And now they got to do work. And it's not their job to do work. Now, if they forgive you, that's awesome. But during the step process, we're not asking them to do anything.
You know, the only thing we're going to ask them is, how do we make this right?
How do we make it right? Yeah.
You know, what would you have me do?
Yeah.
How about paying the money back? You know? Okay.
Yeah.
It's, you know, selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of our trouble. If any of this stuff smells selfish, we're going down the wrong track.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And to heal the relationships just seems selfish to me.
Step nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others.
Step nine, we reached out to the people we had hurt and asked to talk to them. In our conversations, we explained what we felt we had done wrong and discussed what we could do to make things right. If doing this would hurt them even more, we did not reach out.
What we felt we'd done wrong?
Yeah. I mean, you need to be really clear on your harm. You know, as a sponsor, you can't just accept, well, I was a jerk. Man, I know I was a jerk. No, no. What did you, you know, what harm did you cause? Detail that. Explain that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That, you know, this isn't one of the worst ones that they've put up here, but it's more than people that you have to make amends for. It's institutions you have to make amends to.
Sure.
There's a lot of institutions that we've harmed, hurt and harmed too. I mean, just changing that word,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Hurt from harmed to hurt. Something as small as that can
yeah.
take away the meaning of this particular spiritual exercise. I have to believe that.
Yeah, you know, it's almost like if you hurt me, that's a scratch, but if you harm me, that's traumatic.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. Step 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it.
So, step 10, on a regular basis, we continue to think long and hard about our mistakes and be very honest with ourselves. Whenever we were wrong, we would say so as soon as we realized it. This is just terrible. Okay. We continue to think long and hard about our mistakes. Now, certainly that self-reflection is part of it, but we're got to do it. We've been trained in inventory, not thinking long and hard.
That's right.
We've been trained in inventory. So inventory is a process where you move from thinking it's their fault to understanding your problems of your own making. Yeah, you know what I mean? And so, and be very honest with ourselves. You talked earlier, it's very difficult for us to be honest with ourselves. It's better for us to have right behavior, take mm-hmm. right action,
mm-hmm.
than just thinking that, you know, we can be honest with ourselves, because until we have an awakening, we're walking around thinking we're asleep. And I'm going to think long and hard, and I'm going to end up blaming you. The longer and the harder I think about it. Well, I don't really need to make amends. You know what he did? No, it's better to just keep it simple. It's a spiritual exercise. You don't have to overanalyze it.
What I'm seeing here is open-ended steps. They're just kind of open-ended, and you can kind of add to them and manipulate them. Boy, I'd have manipulated these all to get out. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out.
We used practices like prayer and meditation to improve our connection to our higher power. When we did this, we asked for guidance and enough strength to do what is right, not what we wanted for ourselves. So we used practices like prayer and meditation. So maybe primal scream therapy is okay. Maybe reading self-help books is okay too, because yeah. they're kind of like prayer and meditation. Addiction, Monty, you know what I mean?
Just that one word changes everything.
It really does. And guidance and strength to do what is right. Trying to do what is right. But really, it's more about applying spiritual principles. It's like applying the principles of the 12 steps in all of our affairs. We don't know what's right.
Right.
But we can learn these spiritual principles and we can apply them.
Well, see, this is open-ended again, because what is right for me may not be right for you, you know, that kind of thing. Oh, Lord have mercy.
I'm smelling inclusion, let's swing the barn doors wide open. I don't see primary purpose in this. I don't see singleness of purpose in this. I see an enormous acceptance of, you know, however you want to work the steps, you know, work them. And that's not where I came from. Listen, whatever works for you, you know, I'm all for whatever works for you, but I've worked with a lot of alcoholics that have gone down the scale that really need that awakened spirit that comes from actually doing the 12 steps. Mm-hmm. Not, you know, this almost seems self-helpy. And the 12 steps are not self-help. Right. I don't care what anybody says. They are changing us so fundamentally that the actual sunlight of the spirit can come in and fix things. So God can do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. You know,
there's I'll interject a little humor here, if I may. There is a little humorous statement that I heard some time ago that Hazelton Publishing is the largest publisher of self-help books for people whose problem is self-help.
So I got to tell you a self-help book story. So I'm sober maybe a year and a half, and my sponsor comes over to my house. Now, my sponsor never came over to my house. I really wonder what was up. He knocks on the door, you know, and comes in, and I invite him up to my room where, you know, it's my man cave. And I've always had a lot of books, Monty. I've always read, like when I was drinking, it was mainly science fiction, you know. But when I got sober, more of the spiritual books, more things like that would find their way onto my shelves. And I remember him standing there, and he's going, "Wow, Chris, man, you got a lot of self-help books." And I'm like, "Yeah, Bill, yeah, I do. I got a lot of self-help books." He goes, "Can I ask you a question?" And I go, "Sure, Phil." He goes, "Can you show me where your help others books are?" And I'm like, "Well, I'm unfamiliar with that category, Phil." You know, where would I find those, at the Borders bookstore? This is not about self-help. This is about fitting us to be of help.
Yes. Amen. That's a great story. All right. And rounding the corner here, step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Following these steps, just following, taking these steps is the way I would put it, right?
Yeah.
Following these steps led us to a spiritual experience that changed us. We used what we had learned to help other alcoholics. We also continued to use principles of the 12 steps in all of our areas of our life. This is, again, showing control. Okay, now I've got this kind of a thing.
Right.
And following these steps led us to a spiritual experience, not a spiritual awakening. We used what we had learned to help other alcoholics. So we actually take other alcoholics through the 12 steps. We carry the message of the 12 steps. We also continue to use the principles of the 12 steps in all the areas of our life. That's true.
Let me see here. I was going to, the folks from Came to Believe Recovery, we were reading step 12, having had a spiritual awakening. He said, no, having had the spiritual awakening, not just any spiritual awakening, the spiritual awakening. It's the only awakening they had, was the spiritual awakening. And I was like, that is powerful. And this kind of moves us away from that. This makes it a little wishy-washy, doesn't it?
So I got to say this, up until this point in time, Alcoholics Anonymous had one program. Okay, we didn't have program B. You know, right. we didn't have a menu of programs. We had one program, the 12 steps. Now we have two.
Yes.
Or we're going to have two when this thing hits the shelves.
Well, we kind of almost had two when Living Sober came out.
Yeah, that's kind of true. You know, that book was an anomaly. It really was. You know how many people have tried to stop its publication because it didn't really go through, you know, the full-blown conference approval that, you know, normal. The conference approved the draft of it, but never approved the final version or something like that. A delegate was telling me that. But it got published. It came out right around the time Bill was dying and nobody was really paying that much attention. And, you know, they've made a lot of money on it, so they don't want to get rid of it.
Now, I want to share this. This was put out on the internet from South Florida General Service Area 15. There's no name attached to it, and so I can't say whether this is accurate or not. But it gives an example in the doctor's opinion where it says, and this is an example is where the big book says they are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort. The phrase translates to, and they feel anxious and frustrated unless they feel the comfort they get from drinking, throughout the emotional appeal, begging these people to stop. So that's changed. There are definitions of words that are not translated in the margins, sober and sobriety, not using mood-altering chemicals such as alcohol or narcotics. Relapse when an alcoholic who has stopped drinking for a period of time begins to drink again. This according to this person who wrote this, the first thing he says he noticed in this new text is a disclaimer on the very first page that reads, "This book is not intended to replace Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you are curious about the original big book, we encourage you to get a copy and members will help you read it."
Oh my God. So they're expecting everybody to read this one first. And if they're curious,
right,
they'll read the original big book.
Yeah, almost like a historical manuscript. This is what's going on now, but this is the Dead Sea Scrolls of AA. And you can read them if you want to.
Yeah. You know, this is the King James Version. If you want to read it in Latin, I'm genuinely horrified. But listen, that's just me, my personal opinion. What I would recommend to anyone is if you're concerned about this, it's your delegate that you need to find and talk to. Every area has a delegate. You should know what area you're in. You should know who your delegate is and how to contact them and let them know that you either support this, you take a prison commitment in somewhere and you think this will really be helpful, or if you think that it's really dangerous, messing with the original potion, make your voice heard. Think long and hard about this book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and if you if you would contact your delegate.
Yeah. So this brings me to a question. I don't remember. I heard rumors, but that's all I heard. I don't remember hearing anything come back at group level for any kind of decisions. What's up with that? Why weren't the groups notified? Why weren't we allowed to vote on these things? Are we hearing rumors?
Because you don't have to when it goes through the translation department.
That's the ticket, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's gotten voted down every single time.
Yeah.
Hey, Bill, let's ask the translation department to translate it from English to English. Then it doesn't need approval.
We're not manipulative at all, are we?
No, I don't have any opinions. You know me. I'm as open-minded as you can be.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so the best way for people to find out who their delegate is, how would they go about that?
Contact your area office and ask them. So I know I'm in Area 44. Our central office is in South Plainfield, New Jersey. It's in the white pages, AA. I'm sure you can find everything that you need online.
Yep.
And ask for the delegate's phone number or email address.
You can find all that out, your district, everything, by going to AA.org. And clicking on the download links for that stuff. If it's simple, it's just click on find a meeting and then it'll tell you what district, area, and everything that's in.
And they've been taught exactly how to promote this with all of the good reasons. If you have a differing opinion, educate them on what are some of your points about why it's not a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my friend, you know what? It comes back down to, though, we trust God and love people. You know, that's what we got to do. We just got to trusting God, loving each other, and being the hand ready to grab onto somebody who's needing the help. And, you know, we go and we listen to where we can be a maximum service to God and the people he puts in our lives in those 12-step rooms. And we want to be of service. And, you know, I have a friend of mine who's going through a difficult time with it. With a business he's working with right now, and some of the things they're asking him to do are uncomfortable. And I said, well, do they go against your faith? No. Are they immoral? No. Then be obedient. God will honor you for it.
Yeah.
And it's true. I've seen some, you and I both have seen some crazy things happen, and it seems to work out in the wash. And we get
that. You know, we're going to be okay, Monty. You know, even if this thing hits every table in every AA meeting there is, there's going to be old timers. There's going to be people experienced with the basic text who are going to hold the line. You know, we're going to be okay.
So the little intro instrumental there we played was appropriately. We stuck it in there. We thought it was appropriate. It was ZZ Top, Give Me Three Steps. So
I stick that in there. Well, 12 steps, they can't count that high.
That's right.
Let's just give them three, Monty.
I'm telling you. Hey, listen, and this is just to kind of end this a little bit on kind of a fun note, and you probably know that you're a music guy, but I was listening to one of my favorite podcasters. He's all about music. And he was talking about the original group, the Zombies.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an original group, the Zombies, and then they didn't last real long. And so, you know, the music industry had decided, hey, let's make another the Zombies. And so they made another group called the Zombies that weren't really the Zombies. But because nobody had actually seen the Zombies at that point, they even made another the Zombies. And so there was these two groups, Zombies, touring around the country.
Weren't really even the Zombies.
They weren't even the Zombies. One of them fizzled off completely, and the other one, guess who they became?
Who?
ZZ Top.
No, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was like, oh, my gosh, that's so cool.
Well, you know, one thing I heard about ZZ Top, who's the guitarist? He's so good. He can boogie and he can rock. Now, this is right around 1970, and Jimi Hendrix has just died. And they're deciding who's going to be the next Hendrix. And it was going to be the guy from ZZ Top, or it was going to be Johnny Winter. And they picked Johnny Winter, and they gave him the biggest music contract that had ever happened to anyone up until that period of time. And that was right around the second Winter, you know, period of time. And Johnny Winter was just a stone alcoholic. So, listen, I love his music. He did, you know, up until about 1977 or something, man, he was cranking. But you know, they put their money probably not on the greatest horse. I wish they would have picked Phil Keaggy myself.
Oh my gosh. So it was Billy Gibbons, Frank Beard, and Dusty.
Billy Gibson. Yeah, Billy Gibbons is the guitarist.
Right.
And you know, he really was great right out of the gate. Rio Grande Mud, and then there's even an album they did before Rio Grande Mud, which was their Rio Grande Mud was supposed to be their first album that is, it's got some serious good guitar in it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I love guitar.
Yes, you do. And so do I. I love some good lead guitar. Well, folks, thanks for tuning in to this special broadcast. We will reconvene with Walking to the Language of the Heart next Friday. And we hope that this has been informative for you. Again, if you've got some concerns, reach out to your delegate. Just get online, go to AA.org and find out who that is. And speak up. You know, it's your fellowship. It's your organization. Chris, thank you so much.
Monty, thank you.
All right, my friends, until our next broadcast, this is the Monty Man, along with Chris S. We're wishing God's perfect serenity for you.
This has been a broadcast of Take 12 Recovery Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.
This has been a Chicken and a Pig production.